everybody, and welcome back to Spiritual Successor, a comedy video game design podcast where we take your lovely ideas from all over the internet and we turn those into the next AAA titles. I'm your host, AJ Hart.
I'm your other host, Blake Ritt. AJ, I didn't know you were starting. I was literally in the process of a burp as you were saying hello.
Now, you just said, don't worry, I've muted that. I muted that. We're totally fine.
What if this is like the first time somebody's listening to the podcast? Do you think about that a lot? Like every time you and I start an episode, this could be somebody's first episode. Do you think we connect?
Are you concerned that somebody... Stop, wait, hold on. No, because I'm about to reprimand you for this shit. What you're implying right now is one of two things. One, either... you're concerned that people are going to hear you burp, and you don't want that to be the first thing that they hear, even though they're going to hear that within the next 20 minutes, not even full episode. Concerned that they did not get a clean burp, which would be the appropriate level of intro, like appropriate intro point for this podcast. Which hill is it that you're trying to die on right now?
Okay.
You better not do it again on this show.
On a guest episode with somebody we really respect, I was willing to eat a burrito, like, cold, like, no fucks given.
Willing is a loose term. I would argue desperate to.
Yeah, I did really want that burrito. I don't care if people hear me burp. It's just like, it just triggered that you and I spent like the last 2 minutes figuring, what are we going to talk about with the opening of this episode? The thing I want to talk about is, do you think the openers, like, what would be like the worst opener to walk in on this podcast? I think the one where you and I literally spent half of the podcast not talking about game design and just talking about our own bullshit. And then you and I realized that, oh, whoa, we should be talking about games, actually.
I think that the worst opening bit that you could have for this podcast would be a bit where maybe I approach the podcast mic and I'm like, oh, sorry, I'm feeling a little bit lightheaded and not well. And you say, oh, is it because you just shitted yourself so bad? Now, that might sound a little bit familiar because, like it or not, that was the very first set of dialogue ever shared and exchanged between you and me on a mic for the podcast.
That's number one. That's the first bit of Spiritual Successor.
Tim and Eric's Most Corrective Adventure, and that's where it is. Not Tim and Eric. What the fuck is the name of those little surfer dudes?
Bill and Ted.
Yeah, thank you.
Tim and Eric is two grown-ass men. All right.
Yeah, that's the one that's about to come out, isn't it?
No, that's a fun idea. Bill and Ted starring Tim and Eric. That would be like a fever dream of a movie. Actually, that would be a fun duo movie. What's up?
Tim and Eric versus Bill and Ted.
Who do you think would win? I think Tim and Eric, because they are like... I don't know if you've seen the Tim and Eric show, but every time I walk into it, it looks like a psychedelic fever dream.
Tim and Eric feels like show that I probably only experienced at like 3 a.m. when I fell asleep watching Bleach and then woke up and saw them doing something horrible and frightening.
Oh, you're just talking about Family Guy.
It strikes my heart in the same way that Family Guy does, where I look at it and I'm like, that's well known and I don't want to touch it.
All right, for those that are new to the podcast,
as we know,
take your lovely ideas.
Bill and Ted do have the assistance of so many historic heroes and historic entrepreneurs.
Do you think Socrates could beat ass?
Oh, hell yeah. I think Socrates could beat Tim and Eric. I don't know what powers Tim and Eric has, but Bill and Ted, I think, can call upon greater forces.
All right, for those that are new to the show, we take your lovely ideas from the internet and turn them into the next AAA video games that hopefully will make us a lot of money. AJ,
yeah.
Do you want to start us off this week?
Yeah, I'll start us off. Yeah, I think I got one here. Let me just dig around in my little submission here. Let me see here. I think I got one. It's about right here. This comes from Happy Halloween from... @flawless_hollis. Happy Halloween suggests Jello Toucher.
Okay, what game are you thinking for something like this?
So I'm imagining something a little bit like, what's the name of that game? Slime Rancher? Where you had like all the little slimes that you could run around and, you know, you put them into big cages and you squished them and they made little gooey noises.
Wait, this is a game? What?
You don't know about Slime Rancher?
I've never heard of Slime Rancher. This is so cute and adorable. Oh, it's
very cute. So I'm imagining something like that, but rather than the ranching, rather than the categorizing based on color and what they like to eat and their size, it's just a game based on categorizing all these little slimes based on touch.
Do you think Jell-O crystallizes, right, when it's like been sitting and gone bad?
What?
Right?
What
happens to, you know, here's the thing. I don't think I have ever had, I have never experienced leftover Jell-O. Like, I feel like when you make Jell-O, everybody eats it. So Jell-O that's been sitting in a fridge for a long time, uneaten, is never something I've experienced. And that, I don't know if that should scare me or not, because I don't know what happens to Jell-O after a prolonged amount of time. And I'm asking this because this could be like one of the types of Jell-O that you are managing or touching. Also, how do you make a game out of that? Like, how, because this is, if this is a game based off of touch, what is that? What is the, are you saying we should have a peripheral that would like change touch?
Maybe. Okay, here. Okay, you know what? You're right. This is what it's going to be then. I think that it's going to be an online database. And okay. The way that this online database works is I, AJ Hart, would go out and find a Jell-O and I would touch it. And I would say, this Jell-O is fresh out of the oven. Here are the ingredients. Here's what I've touched it now. And then I go to my phone and I, or my whole laptop, and I go to the online database and I say, the date, October 22nd. Jell-O, fresh out of oven. I don't know how you make Jell-O, Blake. Shut the fuck up. And so you type it all out.
I was just about to ask that. AJ, you don't bake Jell-O. You put hot water in it, and then you let it sit. You stir it. You keep stirring it, and then you put it in the fridge, and then it's...
No. I put cold water in it, and then I mix it, and then I put it in the oven, and then I put it in the fridge. I do things different.
Bro,
so,
wait. Actually, would that work? Because... Or does it need to mix while it's warm? So
it probably makes it easier to mix while it's warm. That's why I have a shaking oven. So I put the cold water in and the cold and the Jell-O powder, and then it goes into my shaky oven, which is just an oven that has some loose screws. So I shake the piss out of it, and I hope that it doesn't cause a gas leak.
Okay. So you're saying this is a database that you have to actively go out and experience Jell-O in the real world and then add it to the game?
Correct. And I think that what this is going to be doing is it's offering a service for everybody, because, you know, this is the question, like the question that you have, what does a Jell-O feel like after 8 years? Someone's going to be able to put that in the Jell-O database, in our good Jell-O Toucher database.
Okay. And what does that unlock? Because is this just...
Knowledge, Blake. Like... It unlocks knowledge. I'm gamifying life, all right? Here's the thing. There's a quote that I like to live by. It says, every life would be better if we lived it like gamers. That's the quote. Probably.
I don't know and about so... you, but I've done very bad things to people in my Dishonored 2 run, so I do not want to live like a gamer.
But you've done it so effectively, you know what I mean? Think about if you lived your life that efficiently. Not about murdering, but just about doing things. So
about,
we're gamifying
stealing
life.
Grapes from rich people. Yeah, I can do that. I can get behind that.
Hell yeah, that's exactly it. And so Jell-O Toucher offers us its discovery based on gamifying, dog.
Okay.
We've done it. This is how we hit the next form of our human evolution.
Okay.
By gamifying.
If I can add a little bit of stink on this, because what you're saying here, it reminds me of SCPs. Do you know the format of SCPs?
They're like, an online database, and people say, this is spooky. And then the game developer says, yeah, that's spooky. That's going in my fucking video game. Thanks, idiot. Free writing.
Well, actually, the cool thing about SCP is that it's open source. So like any submission that's put on there can be used on any material anywhere, even if you charge for it. So if you were like make a shirt that has like the SCP on it, you can legally do that. But what I'm saying is that we create the database where it's kind of like this scientific sort of research thing that is of these Jell-O. The put the stank on it is the more you submit to it, you can earn better like flair. Like, you know, on Reddit where you can get like on certain pages, you can get flair. So that's
what
you can do. But you can also just buy that flair. And here's where this, because like, remember when Wiki had like no revisions so people can just put whatever the fuck they wanted?
Yeah, on, back in the dark days of Wikipedia.
Yeah, so the dark days of Wikipedia. So if you can buy Flare, and that Flare allows you to edit other people's submissions. So you could start really like just saying the weirdest shit on other people's Jell-O submissions. So you have this weird conglomerate of people telling their own fictions related to Jell-O, and then you have people trying to just describe Jell-O, which I don't know which one is a weirder thing to do.
Yes. Okay. So yes, we're going to create an online website that has two cultures. One culture that's constantly paying to like make it all weird and shitty, and they'll be like, this is the slime that Abraham Lincoln ate before he was assassinated. And then other people will be like, that's not true. This is the slime that I made with my grandma, and we've been making it for 3 years. Abraham Lincoln didn't know about this Jell-O. And so, like, the two factions will be the people that are just putting in buck wild shit, and then the people that are actually dedicated to cataloging and datafying, quantifying all of our Jell-O and slimes. Okay. Blake, I have a name for this.
Okay, tell me about it.
Stickypedia.
Stickypedia. let me do a quick Google search, because I have a feeling that's going to take me to something that I am not going to be happy about. Sticky.
All right, yeah, go ahead and Google search Stickypedia.
Whoa, okay, hold on. Okay, there's Stickypedia, which is like a place... Okay, that's alarming. So I type in Stickypedia, but I accidentally put a space between the T and the I... And this thing came up called Sickipedia, and one of the first things you can get underneath that, you know, like on Google searches, like each search has like a little sub tabs of what's on that site. One of the first things is racism. But let me properly look up Stickipedia. Stickipedia field. Oh, they're a brewing. Oh, dude, Stickipedia is an IPA brewing company. You want some IPAs?
I know. Nope, we're going like to steal that name, and garbage. We're going to, no free promo, we're stealing that name, and it's Stickypedia, and it's the online database for all of our sticky touch things. Do you have another video game for me?
I do. All right, this one comes to us on Twitter from Joe Wright at Turn Right Here. Trick or Treat Racing. AJ, I think with today's day and age where we kind of have to social distance and, you know, keep safe and all that stuff, drive-in movies are becoming a big thing. Stranger Things is doing this whole exhibit and experience that you like drive through a tunnel and experience like a Stranger Things spooky like maze, but you're in your car. I say we jump on this shit and we are doing trick-or-treat racing. So I want you to picture this for me, the outlandishness of Tokyo Drift, of Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift, where like everybody's cars, yeah, because like in that car, that one Hulk car, they were dressing up for their run as the Hulk for Halloween. Remember that Hulk, that weird little Hulk car where you could see the fist and stuff?
So there's a Hulk car in Tokyo Drift.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was like this. It was like a like kind of the green fleshy color of the Hulk, and on each door you can see his fists, like indenting outward, so like he was trying to break out of the car. It's pretty dope, right? So this, how do we apply something like that where you have to trick or treat? So what I'm thinking is you have a track, or you could do a thing where this is like an open world, like a Need for Speed game, and there are certain houses you need to hit, and like it's a race. So you and I have our own paths that we need to do, or we could have the same path and we're going to the same house. Actually, yeah, that's how we make it unique. So, excuse me, I need to cough for a second.
All right. Well, why don't you slow down? Why don't you bring it back? What is the game here? Okay, before we start talking about tracks and how we make it, what are you pitching here, my brother?
So what I'm pitching here is everybody, you have a whole selection of cars that are Halloween themed. You have the ghost car, you have the pumpkin carriage, you have Sleepy Hollow, the headless horseman on his
all right, horse. It's like the Scooby-Doo movie where everybody's a vampire and they're all driving cars. Scooby-Doo wacky race movie.
Whoa, that's right. Scooby-Doo werewolf or whatever. Where's my werewolf or something?
Yeah, that's right. Shaggy does turn into a werewolf.
Werewolf. Yeah, it's crazy. But basically, so you have all of these wacky racer style Halloween cars. But the thing is, this isn't like a normal race where you have to get to point B or like the end, the finish line, the fastest. You have a set track where you have to like drift by a house, but each house has a limited supply of candy. So you might be able to get, you might not be the first one or the first one to cross the finish line, but if you got more houses along the track, you win that way. So it becomes like, it's like the first one to get to the house gets the candy. Everybody behind them does not get candy. So you like are trying to, because like that's the thing.
Yeah. You're creating a game that is essentially just like the whole race and the whole gameplay loop is that that feeling of tension you feel on Mario Kart when you and Luigi are both going towards the same little like row of the goodies.
Exactly. So like one person gets it, one person doesn't. So then, So what's some more stink that we can put on that? Because I think we have the trick or treat aspect down. There has to, actually, you know what could be fun? There has to be a really in-depth car designer. And there has to be a battle pass on it. So the more you play, the more Halloween shit you unlock. Because battle passes are hot right now,
so, right? Okay. Here's what I'm proposing then. Do you remember the hit, super hit video game that does not get enough credit? Banjo and Kazooie Nuts and Bolts?
I've never played a Banjo Kazooie game in my life.
That's okay. Nuts and Bolts doesn't count as a Banjo and Kazooie game because it's a completely different type of game. See, the first two were like these fun little collectathons and you ran around a fun world and you got little skills and you collected all these little jigsaw pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said, Banjo and Kazooie are coming back. And everyone said, yeah. And then they were like, just fucking kidding, kind of. Banjo and Kazooie are here, but we're going to spend like the intro cutscene and intro dialogue making fun of collectathons and saying that they're shit games that nobody wants to play anymore. Oh my God. We're going to give you a super robust car designing game where you just get all sorts of little Lego pieces and you're building cars over and over and over again. And then you're given little puzzles. Puzzles like deliver this orb across this desert or fly through all of these hoops in the sky. You get little like puzzle based objectives like that, and you have to build a car for every for every mission.
Oh, you know what this reminds me of a lot? You ever played Besieged? Because it's like that, but a little bit newer and a little bit more medieval themed, but same exact concept. You have to,
like Besieged, but more like you were in a world, you were given all sorts of little puzzles. It was sort of like if Besieged took place in little Mario 64 worlds.
Oh, that's adorable. So it's like, it's like a 3D open world where you have to go?
Yeah, it's a 3D open world with a bunch of little, like, zones. Like, a little painting or whatever, and you'd go into, like, welcome to Stink Mountain's hideout, and it's a mountain with a bunch of little stinky guys.
So are you saying that each track is different and will require you to build a different wacky racer car to get the specific treats? Like, are you saying...
Yes, the racetracks will be randomly and procedurally generated. You'll get to see the whole track one time. Then you get, like, 40 minutes... No, not 40 minutes. You get, like, 5 minutes to build a car for this race. Mm-hmm. And here's where all the pieces come from. The pieces come from the season pass, baby.
And you're saying there will only... Okay, here's the thing. Along the track, there are certain ones, if you do not have this specific car built, you can't access it. But then also the same thing of, like, if you have a car built the way... Only certain candy are available to certain vehicle types. So that way it kind of, like, spreads it out. So it'll be like, I can see a track and there's, like, hey, there's some in the water, there's some on land, and there's some in the air. What kind of car do I want to build for this that would maximize my chances?
The little wacky racer parts, like the parts of the car that you decide, like, I want to have a little jump pad on my car. Then, like, maybe when you go through the racetrack, you're going to notice that there's, like, a second story of, like, you can run on, like, the rooftops of the houses and hit a bunch of, like, second story little trick-or-treat points.
Yes, exactly. That way it's, like, each car, and you don't know what everybody else is packing, so there's that kind of, like, risk of, hey, everybody saw that there's, like, a big ass wad of candy in the in, like, the igloo underneath the ocean or whatever, or underneath
so
the
who's
pond.
Bringing the flamethrower?
Oh shit. So, like, and then you might have a race where, like, everybody's really, like, varied, so then it becomes like everybody's doing their own individual race, or it could be a thing where everybody has the same kind of car roughly and they're doing, like, the same exact path with each other, and then becomes this bumper-rama of stuff. Also,
yes.
Could you do a thing Because I actually really loved the concept. I don't think it took off like Amiibos or what was it? It's not Skyjacks. That's the podcast. Skylanders?
Skylanders.
Yeah. Remember in Starlink for the Switch, it was like a Star Fox game in disguise. But what you
I think it was a Starlink game that they then decided to slap Star Fox into.
But you know what I've seen, and from what I've played, it the game feels like it's supposed to have Star Fox in it. So I have no idea how the
game
plays.
You don't know which came first, the Star or the Fox?
Yeah, shut up. So they did a thing where you actually have your own spaceship that you can slap weapons onto physically, and then that would show up in the game. Could you do a thing where this is like a, you buy a loot box every month, and in that loot box is filled with a bunch of, like a bunch of random puzzle pieces that you actually have to physically build your car with what you got in that month's loot box? Because yes, you can do a battle pass and they can earn things. So like maybe
so you're saying it's not that people get 5 minutes in game to build their little car. They get 5 minutes in the real world to put their little car all together, and then they slap the car on the little like Skylander sky pad. And then that car gets like downloaded into the game for the race.
Yes, yes. And then the battle pass is actually when you unlock something, it physically unlocks. But here's the thing. Here's the part where we make a fuck ton of money is you have to buy the battle pass to get access to it, but then you also need to pay the like $3.99 for shipping every time you unlock a new piece.
Yes, there are video games a subscription box. You never know what you're going to get in it. It's going to be guaranteed 4 pieces that come in like a little booster pack situation, and then a cup coaster every month.
You get a really low quality t-shirt, the one where like the print is like like the plastic is part of the shirt, so like every time you wear it like and you get sweaty, it sticks to your fucking skin. It's like that shitty of a print, you know what I mean?
I was imagining that it's maybe one of those shitty prints where like you put it through the wash one time and the whole print peels off.
Oh no, we don't want it to be instant. It's got to flake off, you know, have it be an experience. Like they can see their money just kind of wilting away, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you also have to sell like little you can sell in like, because I don't know what would it be, like you can buy like a little tire, like a toy, because like a little, I'm trying to think of what would a booster pack look like that could contain pieces. So you have like a little, like a Pokeball or a tire that opens
up. Yeah, it's
going to
come in
style.
Like a little tire is a good idea. Yeah, and you can crack it open. Mm-hmm. Maybe it comes in like a little car case and you open the door of the car, or like a little trunk. Ooh, maybe it's a little trunk and you pop the trunk open and it's got little pieces.
Ooh, that'd be fun. Oh, also you can do a thing where maybe each car has its own cargo space. So like if you were to buy like the booster pack itself, like the car itself is also something you can put pieces on in the game, so you can do
so you'll have like a little car ready, like I get what you mean.
Yeah, and then you could just kind of figure out like, oh, what are all these pieces do, and then I don't know
here's
like,
the thing that we need to come to terms with, Blake.
What's up?
The thing about Amiibo, and especially like that little Starlink game or like the later Skylanders where you could like swap the top and the bottom of a character or swap the arms of the character and put them into the Skylanders game.
Well, that's a
those things
thing.
Fucking rule is the thing about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy to say like, ha ha ha, that's a thing that shouldn't be made. The problem is that we all do desperately want them to be made. We're just waiting for one that hits, you know? We're waiting for that one game where it takes this like idea of like a little physical thing that you scan into your game. We're waiting for one to just fucking slap ass. And then the whole video game scope is going to be different. You and I both know this. Think about how different Super Smash Brothers would be if the Amiibos were the characters.
Oh, God, I would love to play a Shovel Knight. Oh! Why is he
but
a
I'm saying the whole
trophy?
Roster. You would remove the whole roster, and you could only use characters that you've bought in the little action figures for. That
see,
would
that
become, rule.
How much does a fucking Amiibo cost, though? So like
$12, probably.
So $12, and how
I don't know.
Fucking,
how much does an Amiibo cost? I hope it's around that much.
Let's just say $12, just for, we're probably wrong, but who gives a shit?
It's probably way more expensive.
Yeah, I mean, probably when they first come out, like gold. Like I remember looking at, I wanted to buy the Shovel Knight one, but I can't find it anywhere. So now he's like $50. So I wouldn't be surprised if he was like $25 to begin with.
I love it.
But say, okay, how many Smash people are on the roster? It's something like 80, right?
Yeah.
So like 80 times, like, so we're going to make so much fucking money if it's a game, or they're going to make so much fucking money if they do something like that, because every time, like, I, and say, see, there's so many problems with this, because, hey, say you're getting somebody into Smash, and they're like, okay, what do I need to play? Well, you're going to need to go buy your own amiibo, and that's going to be $25, and they're going to be like, well, I don't want to play this game anymore, because that's almost half the cost of the game itself.
Except that's the fucking rush of it, dog. There's a whole ass anime in the Gundam verse that revolves around the idea of people having tiny little mechas that they've built and personalized so they can slap it into the digi space and fight their cool Gundams against
it. I hate to break it to you, but anime is fantasy, dude. That's not how real life works.
Oh, anime rules. I mean, want like, that.
Okay.
What I'm saying is we want that. We all want that. We all secretly want that.
I,
is the thing.
I think it's a fun idea, but when you get to the point of like rosters as big as Smash Bros, it's going to be like, well, it's just going to be so fucking, well, this is coming from a guy who has to buy actually, I stand corrected. I have to pay $100 for one little Warhammer minifig, so I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. And every Warhammer... Wow, I just shot myself in the foot. Yeah, every Warhammer army takes, like... You have to have, like, upwards of, like, 100 individual figures. And, like, for 10 of... It depends on the unit, but, like, you're spending upwards of $40 to $80 for, like, a 4-man to 10-man unit. So,
see?
Yeah, actually, you know what? This is the future! Warhammer's been doing it since the... Fuck, it's since the late 80s. We're gonna make so much money. We're gonna take the Warhammer method. And you know what, AJ? We're gonna make it... And this is actually, you know what? We're just gonna steal from Warhammer. Here's the thing. All of these pieces that are gonna be in our racing trick-or-treat game come unpainted. You have to fucking paint them yourself, so you have to also buy all the painting materials, all the paintbrushes, all of the liquid green stuff, because this shit was poorly molded, so you have to, like, fill in the molds, and it just becomes a fucking pain in the ass. But you know what? How we market it? It's like, it's an activity for kids to do with their parents. So the
exactly.
parents are like, oh, okay, cool, so I can, like, do finger painting. Like, and you know what's so fucking cool? Maybe... What you do is like how you paint it actually shows up in the game. So if you were like draw, like, I don't know, you just draw a dick on the side of your car, it shows up in the game or just something like that. It's like,
so here's the gameplay loop, right? We have a physical box that is shipped out to the people that pay the premium. And so they get little like Lego pieces and they get like the skeleton of a car. You load into your game. You're like, all right, I'm going to play the game. You get to see the racetrack one time. The camera zips through super fast. You then say, okay, I know what I saw there. And you're going to grab all your little Lego pieces and you build the car perfect for this run. You slap the car onto your little digi scanner. The game scans it. Then you run through the game and it plays like Mario Kart. Your goal is to hit as many of the like trick-or-treat houses as much as possible, because you're not going to get points for winning. You're getting points for getting the most candy.
Ooh,
this
also,
rules,
actually,
that's
going to
be where we put a pin in it and move on.
Okay, actually, there's one last thing I want to discuss, because I don't know if we're going to come back to it. At the to motivate people to also be first, at the finish line, there is a pile of candy. So, like, first, second, and third do get candy from crossing the line first, second, and third, but you can increase your chances by collecting candy along the way.
Yes, so something, and if you get enough points in-game, in the in-game currency, then maybe we'll let you order... A cosmetic item? Something to be shipped to your house? We'll figure out rewards later.
Yeah. We got it. You got another game for us, brother?
Yeah, this comes from 2normie4normies at TJGarcia1. A horror game with herring mechanics like sprinting and crafting.
What are you thinking?
So what this makes me think of is, like, you and I have been playing Phasmophobia lately, and I believe what a herring mechanic is like a mechanic that's there, but it doesn't mean shit. And that reminds me of sprinting in Phasmophobia. You can hold that button because it feels better when you do, but it doesn't do anything.
No,
it doesn't help you. If that ghost wants to kill you, it's killing you.
Yeah,
the mechanic
no
is just there
game.
To make you feel safe. And I'm really interested in just in general mechanics of a game that exist to make you feel a little bit safer. Like, say, Resident Evil 7, you run through the game and eventually you get a shotgun. And your first thought when you get the shotgun is, oh, fuck yeah, I have a shotgun. Ain't nobody gonna hurt me now. But the problem is that now you realize that you have another item that you need to get ammo for. So now you don't have a shotgun. You defended yourself one time, and now the shotgun's gone forever, and it's just there to serve as a stressor. I want a horror game with lots and lots of mechanics, where the mechanic seems like it's there to help you, but we as the developers know it doesn't matter. You're still going to get boned if we send a skeleton after you.
I feel what would be kind of interesting is if you start off the game with the perception that you have everything you need to do it. So, like, I'm saying, like, you start up the game, you have a shotgun strapped to your back, you have a pistol on your side, you have a knife, you have dynamite, or maybe not dynamite because...
you can't have dynamite because we all know that all real world problems can be solved by dynamite.
AJ, real quick, you have dynamite, but you have no lighter. So you have everything that you need, but you don't have the resources to fully use them. So you don't have ammo. You don't, maybe your knife is, and maybe you don't even have a knife or something like that. So it's like the game starts off as like you're defenseless. So it's like Soma or Amnesia. So you're just walking around through this environment and you can point your shotgun at things. And because going back to Phasmophobia with the sprinting thing is it. You say it does nothing, but it does do a little bit. It does speed up your character ever so slightly to kind of fool you into thinking it's doing something, but then you
it speeds you up enough that you can run a little bit faster past your friend that hasn't learned what button is sprint yet because it's not a noticeable difference. And then you think to yourself, man, how is my friend Dylan so fast? And it's because they know where the secret sprint button is and you don't.
So there's a couple ways you could do that. One is you spawn in a game and you have no idea what the controls are. So you're put in a horror game where you have to, because that's how it kind of was for me in Phasmophobia was if you avoid the, when you first get into the training thing, it doesn't tell you how to pick up things until like two scenes into the training thing, which is really weird because it's like you were supposed to, that you had to pick up and interact with things before you could get to the scene where it tells you what the controls are. So
oh, really quick, should we describe Phasmophobia, or are we going to assume that that's required reading for our audience?
I mean,
I'm fine with it being required reading.
I feel like Phasmophobia is kind of like Among Us. Like, I think most people
get the idea. Okay, it's in the cultural eye now. All right, good. We can move on then.
Okay.
So what I do want to focus on, though, is how do we make a mechanic that we know is going to feel useless? How do we make a crafting system that feels like it's dog shit? It's just there to make us feel better.
Play Rust.
Okay, explain Rust's dog shit crafting mechanic for me then.
Okay. I played Rust very, very early
on. In four sentences or less. That's all you get.
I played Rust very early on. My first experience was with it. When I logged in, there were no instructions for me. And anytime I crafted something, it was useless until I crafted another thing to fix it. And there was no instructions on that pathway.
Well, okay, so you craft things that are broken.
It was sort of.
So what you're saying is like it's a crafting system for our dynamite situation, right? We have a stick of dynamite. You can craft a lighter. But when you craft the lighter, you've crafted an empty lighter.
Oh, you're fine. you have to siphon fuel from something and turn it and make it usable.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. You know what also be like, I don't know about you, but like one like horror thing I wish people like played with more is, I don't know about you, but like every time I've used a lighter, sometimes it like takes a while for me to get it going, but it does create a spark. What if you created a horror game that has a lighter that doesn't stay on, but every time you flick it, it gives you a little flash of light of what your surroundings are. So, like, you have to, like, continuously, like, chick, 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 and you only get, like, just a brief second of something. How fucking scary would it be where you're flicking, you flick the lighter on, there's nothing in the hallway in front of you, you take a couple steps, you flick it on again, and now there's a silhouette. There's, like, the demon from Lights Out looking at you with, like, their piercing white eyes. How fucking, like, scary would that be? And then you flick it again, and then they're gone. Like, so maybe that's something, because I think that plays into what you're talking about of mechanics that you feel could help you. Like, having that does allow you to see, but it doesn't really help you do anything because it's so brief.
Great example of a herring mechanic that I experienced lately was I played through Shadow of the Colossus, and the entire game you have an attack button with your sword that your character can use to just swing their sword. Would you like to know everything that you can hit with your sword that it does something?
A tree, some plants, so you can get, like, herbs or whatever?
Incorrect. No, neither of those things. There's exactly one thing in the entire game that you can hit that the sword does anything, and it's one boss.
It's
one boss that you like smack its little teeth and it will go a different direction. But like, I spent 6 hours in that game and I had the attack button the entire time. It never did anything for me. Okay. I want to jump. I want a horror game with a jump button and there's never anything to jump onto. I want a game where there's a flashlight that you can find and you're never going to find a battery for it. I just want a horror game where your character can't do shit. They just has animations that make you feel like you're doing something. A game where you have a punch button, but you can't punch a ghost. A game with a sprint button, but you can't outrun a banshee or a werewolf. A game where you do have a gun that you can aim at people. You will never find ammo, and maybe you will, but if you shoot something, you can't kill Dracula with a gun.
Then the gun only has, like, one specific use, and it's like, you do a thing. You could also play the idea that you have access to all these things, but you never get to use them as intended. So say you have this gun. You can point it at things, and that makes you feel better. Or maybe it gives you like, it gives you just the faintest idea that if you point it at something that's chasing you, they'll flinch just for a second.
Yeah. I was gonna say like a gun where like you're right, shooting Dracula won't do anything, but if you point a gun at Dracula, he will flinch. He will back up a little bit because for the slightest moment, Dracula's gonna think, "Yeah, what if that's a garlic bullet? Whoa! That better not be a garlic bullet."
It has to be as minute as the sprinting in Phasmophobia. It's like, you don't notice it unless you're paying attention. And what another thing I was thinking is, like, you start the game with all of these items. They have very specific uses later on that you have to use them in to save your life. Yes. So say you're running down a corridor or whatever, and you pass through this metal gate and you close it and there's a bunch of werewolves coming at you. You have to take the shotgun off your back and like put it through the hole, like bracing it. So like the shotgun becomes like a, you ever see like people who close like cafeteria doors and then they put the broom through the two big handles so the doors can't open now?
Yeah.
Something like that.
You can use the shotgun as a prop to lock a door. I love this. Yeah. You have all these tools that you can use to go into Monster Hunt and like spookify hunt, but none of them are used in the way that you would think. You never jump to like clear a gap. You jump one time so that the werewolf doesn't see your feet under the stalls.
God, the idea of the monster hunter that's just really shitty at jumping is just a very, very, when you jump, it looks like the first person view just looks like they stood on their tippy toes for like a second and then they just
just little things like that. And like they're mechanics that you have through the whole game. Like you're going to go through the whole game knowing that you can throw your shotgun like that, but you're never going to understand why you can throw your shotgun or throw any prop like that for that matter, except for the one singular time you're going to be like, oh, I can lock the door with the shotgun.
Yeah. And those will be like the make it or break it moments of like, that they're like most situations, I think it'll play something like Amnesia or Outlast where you are like sneaking and defenseless, but there will be like maybe quick time events or certain scenarios where you have to run and
I would actually love it to play a little bit like Shadow of the Colossus. Like I think Amnesia is also a good one to do. Like Amnesia is maybe a little bit too linear for what I'm thinking, but like what Shadow of the Colossus kind of did was it was an action puzzler, right? Amnesia, you're just trying to get to the next room the whole time without a whole lot of like puzzle solving. I think that this game, like, you go into a home, there's a monster there, you know that you're going to have to face it somehow. The question is how, and maybe what gimmick do you need to use now to solve this problem?
See, the issue with, because you're thinking of like kind of open world, like Zelda style of like you can approach these problems the way you want.
We could do levels still, but I do like this. You can face it however you want.
I feel that the game should be somewhat linear because then if it isn't, I think it'll run into that very weird, that'll be like the obvious question when they're playing. It'll be like, if this is as open world as it looks, why doesn't he just leave and go get ammo for his guns? What is forcing him to stay in this situation?
I get you.
Because if they are able to leave this area, let's say, they can go get ammo. They are, like, I'm assuming at the beginning of this game, they came in, like, actually, let's say this, like, the game starts with them fully loaded, they have bullets, they have stuff, and then the game is about getting all of those material, then something happens, you get jumped, you lose all of your weapons and ammunition and stuff. So then the opening level is about you getting all of these things back, but none of them have their ammunition, and you don't have like your dynamite, or you don't have your lighter has lost all of its fuel because it got cracked open or something, but you can still spark it. So that's the opening level. And then you, as a player,
I don't think
are
that
assuming,
the game takes away the ammo. I think that the player uses it all up through the game and thinks to themselves, I'll find more ammo later. And then they never do. I want it to be like the player's fault that they've completely ran out of their things because we never gave them anything to use it on.
How about this? How about we like give them just such a huge false impression where like, the game starts with the character walking into this village. Let's say the backdrop of this is like some haunted village, and you walk into a room that's fully stocked. It has all the bullets, everything you could possibly need, giving the visual like cue that, oh, this is going to be an action game where I'm just going to be guns blazing the whole time and it's not going to be an issue. So then you go into the first level and they just reckless abandon. Or they're like, we tell them like all of the tutorial stuff is, this is how you light your dynamite, this is how you throw it. Just the whole first level is,
yes,
about blowing
the tutorial, like, teaches them all the stuff that they would think that they would need for an action game, right? The tutorial, yes, is like, aim your gun to shoot, light dynamite, press this button to toss. Later on, they're going to need to toss their shotgun, but we taught them how to toss their dynamite.
Yes.
Yes.
So like
rules.
the whole level is like, we trick them into blowing all of their ammo under the assumption that they're going to get more at the end of the level. And maybe we even say what we do is like, we give a sign and we'll tell like in the load up room, being like, ammo, like, supplies will be, stocked in between levels. So like they think like when they get to the end of this level, there's going to be another arms room. But when they get there, it's just like a piece of something that they can use for later. So like, it, supplies doesn't always mean like, maybe it, supplies will be health, let's say. So like,
I love this idea of like, you're playing as like a Call of Duty character in, yes, like a horror world, but all of your Call of Duty skills no longer work.
Yes. So
like you have the wrong tool, yep, sets for all of this. This rules, actually.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Do we want to go into one more game and then we can decide on our nug?
Yeah. One more and we'll make it quick.
Okay. I'm really excited about this one. On Twitter, I can see the endless cosmic horror in your eyes at Dust in Your Eyes suggests William Shakespeare's Grand Theft Auto. So what I'm picturing is, this is like, this is the English Renaissance period. And you know who was also really active in the English Renaissance period? Da Vinci. So
Da Vinci?
Da Vinci was also in the Renaissance period. Yeah, Da Vinci? So what I'm thinking
is... That's a stupid joke. I love it. Keep going.
So I'm thinking this is a heist game. Like, Grand Theft Auto 5 was like very much like about doing big heists. There's a bunch of things in GTA I don't like, but like the idea of doing big group heist, like,
yeah, one of the coolest things about Grand Theft Auto 5 was it, like, using all of these little tools throughout the game to give you really cool set pieces.
Yes. So imagine set pieces in like Renaissance period England. So one of the heists that comes to mind is because William Shakespeare and Da Vinci are working together. So maybe Shakespeare is putting on their newest play because they know some, but like, it's going to get some very fancy people here who all have like what's that jewel that, that woman was wearing from Titanic? It's like,
I believe it was the Redstone of Azhar.
I have no idea what that is.
It was a sick JoJo's reference for all my JoJo heads out there.
Okay, so somebody in the English Renaissance is coming with a redstone, and they are putting on this play so they can use that as like a distraction to go steal it from this person. So, and then you also have all of Da Vinci's like sweet fucking experiments and modes of travel that he was working on. So there's maybe some heists where they have to use his helicopter to get to the tallest building in the city.
And so like, you want like a video game that plays like Grand Theft Auto, but it's in old English times?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. So we could do something like that. But there's also, I think it plays like kind of like how Assassin's Creed, what's it, was Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, the one where Da Vinci became really active.
Yeah, and he gave you a cool glider suit for little side missions.
Yeah! So it's like you, as the game progresses, Da Vinci is like your mastermind guy. So I think this game kind of follows you It follows Shakespeare.
Billy Shakes, as we call him.
Billy Shakes. I was thinking Willie Shakes,
Billy Shakes.
Billy Shakes?
Yeah.
All right.
That's what I call him because him and I are tight like that.
Oh, dude, right on. What do you think? Grand Theft Auto has always done those things where it's like the big party set pieces. What do you think would be the biggest party in English Renaissance?
Probably William Shakespeare opening his cool open roof theater, the one that burned down, I think, but maybe not. Maybe before it burns down.
So maybe that's our opening set, like our opening set pieces, that he's throwing this just giant rager in. I have it because GTA 5 was definitely about the team aspect of it. It was the three of them and their three individual lives coming to a point of like figuring out, do they want to ace the weird
it was kind of about them like trying to become like a cool team, because you're right, the like culminating like end point was going to be like, oh, are you going to kill one of them, or are you going to have all three of them fight against the FBI?
Yes. So there is a theory out there that Shakespeare, William Shakespeare, was a pen name for multiple people.
There also the thought that he just stole all of his artists or all of his stories, though?
That is also true, and we could play into that. Maybe that's the thing that they're stealing from people. They're like,
they're stealing stories.
But what I'm thinking is, it would be so cool to do a heist game where every character is under the same like alias. So like when we say William Shakespeare,
we just made Killer 7.
Really? Is that I did not know that was a thing.
Yeah, well, Killer 7, it's a little bit different, but it might be entirely up your alley. It's a GameCube game where you play as this assassin that has split personalities, and so, like, every personality of his has different skills.
Oh, that's interesting. Is it, like, problematic, like, multiple personality thing, or is it, like, cool?
A little problematic and doesn't handle it with, like, great care. It's from, like I said, it was from the GameCube days. Nobody knew shit back then.
That's true. That's very true. Oh, God, this guy looks like a nerd.
Which one? Are you looking at Killer 7?
Yeah, I'm looking at Killer 7. He has like a little hoodie, and then he just has like the little like three pieces of hair on the top of his head.
I think he has a personality where he's like a cool like professional wrestler.
Oh, that's fucking rad, actually.
Blake, it's nug time.
It's nug time. Okay. Are you not feeling William Shakespeare's GTA?
I'm not feeling William Shakespeare's GTA. I just don't know where to hit a joke on it, you know? It just sounds like a dope game, you know what I mean? Like, in the same reason that, like, the Godfather games fucking rule is because, like, oh, it's an open world, like, in a, like, old Italian gangster town. You're gonna be a gangster now and you're gonna do cool heists. Like, the formula fucking works, and we all want to see that in other time zones.
Okay, so what are you thinking? Because I kind of am leaning towards the Halloween Racers game.
I'm leaning towards a game where we spend our entire tutorial telling the player to play a game one way, only for all of those tutorials to stop mattering as they're locked in a horror game.
Okay. Actually, this is a better one, because then we can look into our boss fights on Discord and we can actually come up with, like, what are some of the bosses that they would experience in this? So where do we want to go? Do we need to figure out? Because I feel like we have the core gameplay down. I think it's just a matter of figuring out backdrop, right?
Yeah, I think it is a matter of backdrop at this point, right? You proposed the idea of a village, and maybe we eat a lunch. Maybe this is what Resi 8's going to be. Maybe this is what Resi 9's going to be. Maybe we project ourselves down a little bit further, right? Maybe we take Chris Redfield, known badass and superhero, and be like, well, what if Chris had to deal with monsters again? And he couldn't just like, well, now I'm proposing a world where we're in a timeline of Resident Evil where there wasn't the Resident Evil 7 DLC, where Chris Redfield does run out of ammo. And the solution is that he just punches the fuck out of zombies
today. I was about to say, like, I don't know. Anytime I think of Chris Redfield or Leon Kennedy, I just picture that hallway scene where they did run out of ammo and it just became them doing sweet fucking like gymnastics karate to kill zombies.
Now, and in Leon Kennedy's defense, I think that he is less lethal than Chris Redfield, but he did survive 3 helicopter crashes in Resident Evil 6. So I do think that maybe he doesn't have the same lethal capabilities as Chris Redfield. He is far more indestructible. Leon Kennedy is a tank, and Chris Redfield is a barbarian.
I'm sorry, I'm just laughing at the concept that a game thought it was cool and over the top and awesome to be like, you know what's better than surviving one giant set piece helicopter crash? What if this motherfucker survived 3 in one game, in one story? It's
You're
just
talking
like,
shit, but Resi 6 does rule, is the first
thing
does, about
and it's it. So, it's just so weird, because like I played Resident Evil 4, was like my first Resident Evil game, and that's where, like, in my opinion, it started to get like very kind of action gamey, you know, it started losing that, like, like
it stops being slow, scary and starts becoming an action game. And then Resident Evil 5 happened and you fight the main bad guy in a volcano and Chris Redfield punches the hell out of a boulder so that he can save his best friend.
God,
Chris Redfield, you were so cool.
Chris Redfield's so fucking sweet. Okay, I guess there isn't a...
Resi branding because their characters are just so buff and powerful and cool and lethal.
But it would be interesting if you did go into a situation where, or you put a character like that in a situation where those skills don't apply. So like you were mentioning, there was a punch mechanic, but the punch mechanic that does nothing. Chris Redfield it's like he's in a town where what's that big buff dude that wears the trench coat? It's like Mr. X or something.
Yeah. Mr. X.
It's a village or a city that's full of Mr. X's. So physical combat is fucking meaningless.
Chris Redfield maybe can punch the shit out of every zombie he can face. But can he fight a ghost?
A fucking werewolf or a slime monster? Like,
of course he can fight a werewolf. A slime, though, a slime's going to absorb his punches. That is a lethal danger to Chris Redfield. Known superhero Chris Redfield.
Okay, so because I think it is fun to do that contrast of like somebody that could totally beat ass on a normal level put in a world where those skills just can't live up to it. They can't they can't compete with the things in front of them. So
the solution. Resident Evil 9, Chris Redfield's taking helm. He's fighting ghosts now. The one thing he can't punch his way out of.
He's punching ghosts.
Chris Redfield's gonna be like, I have all these cool muscles.
You find out Wesker's behind it, and he's become a ghost. And
created a ghost disease.
He created a ghost disease. When people drink this, they die, but they don't die completely. But they do not have a physical form.
It's the G virus. The G stands for ghost.
This is Resident Evil what? 8?
This will be
right?
9.
This will be 9 Resi 9.
This will be 9 because they're going to take on werewolves and vampires in Resi 8, and Chris Redfield's going to take on ghosts in Resi 9. And the tagline for the game will be something like Resi 9, give up the ghost, or something like that. And like the whole narrative is like Chris Redfield's racked by visions of his past or some shit.
You could do it. The thing is, here's the plot of the game. Each level, he's going and finding, because you said G-virus for the ghost. That implies that every other monster was also kind of brought on by a virus. So a werewolf would be the W-virus. The vampire would be the V-virus. So the game is about collecting samples of all of those different viruses. So that way they can mix it together.
You walked into Wesker's secret base where he has a series of viruses. After the T virus, there was the G virus, the W virus, the V virus.
See, the T virus was like not on the nose, and he was like, but at this point, he's like, no, I don't give a shit. I don't need to. We live in a world where zombies have taken over. Being on the nose is no, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter anymore. Who gives a shit? I have werewolves in my army. Fuck you.
Yes. Okay. I'm just really glad that we found a way to get Chris Redfield to be like scared again, because apparently the answer wasn't having him fight 3-story tall Goliaths. The answer was ghosts and werewolves.
Ghosts, werewolves, vampires.
Oh my.
Oh, fuck yeah. And oh, AJ, if we're doing the ghost mechanic, how cool would it be if they, some of the ghosts actually can like possess objects so we can maybe get a Sleepy Hollow in there? Oh, Chris, yeah. Chris Redfield just doing a chase sequence where he's like running away from Sleepy Hollow. Or is it the Headless Horseman? I think Sleepy Hollow was the name of the town or the
Sleepy
story.
Sleepy Hollow was the name of the TV show on the hit CW show Sleepy Hollow, where it had a cool guy from the olden times. The Headless Horseman.
Okay, so just like imagine one of those chase sequences from like Resi 4 or Resi 5 where like the camera's pointed at your face but in your scene behind you, and it's just Chris Redfield running towards us, but then like the Headless Horseman is like on fire behind him. Actually, wait a second, that's just a sequence from Metal Gear Solid 5.
Yeah,
because you're on a horse running away from the guy who's on fire and has like bullets in his skin. That's basically the same
thing.
But it'll
be scary this time. I think that it's important to remember this game's like the gimmick of this game is that all of the tutorial stuff that we were taught is thrown out the window. We're taught how to throw dynamite. Later in the game, you need to throw your gun so that you can jam a door. You're taught how to use your gun only because it's going to make a villain flinch later, not because you're ever going to use a bullet.
So I love this because people are going to go into it thinking it's like a classic Resident Evil game of like, I'm not classic, but like more of the newer flavor, save for Resident Evil 7, of like guns blazing, things are crazy, big monsters, and you blow all of your ammo within the first level, and then you realize you've got none left. Now the game just becomes this survival game and people are going to be like, what the fuck is happening?
Hell yeah, this rules. Okay. Get back into the dirt, Chris Redfield. Take your muscles off. Like the weird commercial from the Super Bowl with the
Jason
cool
Momoa.
Buff long-haired guy.
Jason Momoa.
Thank you.
All right, so let's look to our Discord and a boss fight, and let's see if we can't find any, like, what are some monsters he can go up against?
So I've got a boss submission here from Sniff. The submission is the Fierce Four Champions of 2011, and it's four dudes screaming with the caption Dragonborn. But what I think is important here is that it is four white dudes with like similar crew cuts. And I think that what this ghost is going to be is, it's important to me that if we're going to have a game focusing on Chris Redfield, it's not new Chris Redfield. It's like original, like Chris Redfield. It's Chris
like
Redfield,
very
from, like,
Latino, very like very POC,
yeah,
representation,
yeah, dark-skinned Chris Redfield, fucking like white toast normie, like I'm a Hollywood actor named Chris Redfield. Like, we fucking hate that Chris Redfield. I want Resident Evil 5 Chris Redfield.
Man, they,
and we're gonna have that Chris Redfield, and he's gonna fight off against these four. It's gonna be four character models that are all like generic Chris Redfield.
It's it's himself from the other game. It's
not round Chris
Redfield. You were saying like he's chasing his own inner ghost, so it's like himself from previous games, but they like
he's facing off against him from other games. Yeah, but I want this to be the design from Chris Redfield from like Resident Evil 5, from the Marvel vs. Capcom game, where he had like a nice round face and he had darker skin and he doesn't look like the fucking guy from Resident Evil 7, where at the end he says, I'm Chris Redfield. And you think, you're not.
Who the fuck
you're
are you,
not Chris
man?
Redfield.
Okay. I like that, because then we can play into the whole visions of his past and stuff. I want to go one that's a little bit more chaotic. So there, a couple episodes back, we were talking with Jupiter about this wrestling show called Kaiju Fight or Kaiju Battle or something. It's a wrestling TV series, but every wrestler is a different kind of kaiju. Andrew David suggests Burger Bear, which is one of them. What happens when let's say in this town, there was a guy like a mascot, like with a sign spinner, and he was wearing a burger outfit? What happens when that guy got bit by a werewolf? He didn't take off his burger costume. He's just a werewolf in a burger costume now. So like that could be one of the enemies in one area, maybe. So there's just like this little comic.
I like that. Yeah. Because
you know what you could do with when he catches you, what he does is they like claws and tears off the burger to reveal its face, and then the face like noms you. So it's like this really like, oh, now this was funny at first, but now shit got real. As like you see like the fluff and threads tear apart to reveal werewolf grimace. So Burger Bear. There you go. Burger Bear. All right. We're ready for patch notes. Actually, no, we need to wait. We need to come up with a name. So it's Resident Evil 8.
I think this is Resi 9. Resi 9, give up the ghost.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Resi 9, give up the ghost. Okay. I like that. Resi 9, give up the ghost.
Blake, that's a game. You ready to go to patch notes?
I am hella ready to go to patch notes. Hey, everybody. Voting is still happening right now. It's more important than ever to get your vote in. And I believe most places, or I think overall, but I might be going off of California, it's November 2nd. So get that in. If you haven't already, make sure to register. We got a big future ahead of us, and we want to start 2021 off right.
Yeah, I hope you guys like hearing us remind you about voting, because we're not going to stop reminding you about voting until the voting's done. So go vote.
Outside of that, if you guys want to come check us out on Twitter, where we're posting basically daily updates now of art, and thanks to our the submitters that we had that week.
We recently released a video on our YouTube channel of another BF4. I don't think we plugged that on our show yet. So if you want to go check out our YouTube at Spiritual Successor Podcast on YouTube, you'll find an episode where Blake and I played Rocket League against each other and had a grand old time.
Yeah, it was very good. We got to play more Rocket League. I enjoyed playing that with you, buddy boy.
I enjoyed playing it with you, too. That's going to be where we go ahead and close this episode out today. Our intro and outro song is Cheap Shop by Anna Monoguchi, an excellent song from an excellent band for an excellent game. I have been your host, AJ Hart.
And I have been your other host, Blake Rea.
This has been Spiritual Successor, and these are cool games
that should not be made.